Welcome to the AFL Ratings Podcast. We speak with Aaron Bryans this week and we go through the round four wrap gather round in Adelaide. He covered a few games for ABC over the weekend. This podcast was recorded on Monday night, April 8, 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Make necessary adjustments as news comes to hand. Enjoy the pod. Okay, so let's welcome in Aaron Bryans. He did four games over the weekend for ABC and what an experience it was gather round. How did you go, Aaron?
Yeah, it was amazing, Pete. Just so good to have everybody in town for another year. I think the public really embraced it once again. There was so much to do around the state and on top of the footy. So the Norwood Food and Wine Festival, checking out the Adelaide Hills and the footy fan zone as well. So the whole weekend was just an incredible vibe. I think we had some really good games across the Saturday and the Sunday in particular. And just a chance to see everybody in the industry as well, all those that you've met along the way. But even for general punters, though, not even those who are just mingling in the media circles, you walk around the city after a game and, you know, you look into the Strathmore, for instance, and there's David King just sitting amongst like 20 punters having a beer and they're all picking his brain. And the next bar over, Jonathan Brown's in there. And I think if you just spend some time around the city, you know, who's who of football is roving around because everybody's in town for this big event. So it's just perfect for, you know, hard on like footy fans who just, there to just enjoy a weekend and really soak it all in.
Excellent concept. So let's get into the four games that you covered over the weekend. So Adelaide Melbourne back on Thursday night. Melbourne too strong for the Crows with Christian Petrarca the standout for the Demons.
Yeah, it was a weird old game. I don't think the margin was reflective on how dominant Melbourne actually were over Adelaide. It was a bit of a scrap, which we saw in the week prior as well between Port Adelaide and Melbourne, that I think defensively they set up so well and Stephen May coming back into the side only made them better. So Adelaide, you know, had a little late run that kind of made the margin a little bit more flattering than it should have been, but they're no good right now, the Adelaide Crows. I think defensively, they're undermanned because of the injuries to senior players. In the middle, they've got no outside run and they just cannot figure out a way to fix that. They keep throwing Jordan Dawson around in different positions, but I don't think he is the problem. I think it's Laird and Crouch going backwards way too often. I think there was a period where he was on 24 touches, Matt Crouch had 45 metres gained. So they've got to figure out how to get some outside run in there because that's kind of how you know, you win modern football. It's speed kills, right? So that's how what all those top teams are doing, and Adelaide's not really doing that. And their forward line was lacking cohesion, very selfish at times. And I think that was emphasised by, you know, Josh Fraschelli sticking an arm up to cut a lace-out delivery to Taylor Walker in the dying stages when they were a bit of a chance to snatch a win. So they've got a lot of work to do, Adelaide. And Melbourne, meanwhile, to go back-to-back, beat Port Adelaide and Adelaide and stay on the road for a week is a pretty impressive feat. And once again, they don't dominate the key statistics, so like setting clearances or even contested possession. They're pretty around the average mark for that. But the system that they're running, they're so in sync with it, and they the depth of their list is just so tremendous. You know, their bottom players are still shining to the point where Clayton Oliver has 16 touches and it doesn't hurt them. Everyone's got a role and they play it magnificently. So I'm very bullish about, how Melbourne will go for the remainder of the year, considering they've still got some stars to come back in from injury.
On Friday night, Port Adelaide and Essendon, the Power completely dominating this game. Connor Rosie, an outstanding game along with Jason Horne-Francis.
Yeah, the first quarter was pretty tight. It felt like this really frenetic enthralling game that kind of took us on rides. And, you know, Jake Stringer was shining early. I think the tall back line of Port Adelaide was exposed a little bit and it took them a while to figure out their matchups. And then as we closed in on halftime, it felt like Port Adelaide was getting some ascendancy and then totally blew them out of the water. And we kind of predicted it in the build-up that the Bombers just can't defend the corridor. And Port Adelaide were getting it so cleanly out of the middle that they were just racing towards half forward with ease. And then picking out targets left, right and centre. So the Bombers have to sort out what's going on in terms of not only the midfield mix, but what happens when they turn over the ball because they just can't seem to slow down any sort of transition from opposition sides. It's just way too easy to go end-to-end when they give it away. So, and that's been a consistent trend over the last few years between different coaches. So their defensive work rates are just not there, Essendon, and that's going to plague them for a long period of time. And I think for the Port Adelaide faithful, you know, we've seen glimpses of what Jason Horne-Francis can be, and I think that was his breakout game. He was tremendous, and you combine him with Rosie and Butters, you know, for the next 10 years, they're going to be arguably one of the best trios in the game, and that's pretty daunting. wonder what they're going to do with Ollie Wines, considering he's probably going to be available this weekend, and how they slot him back in, because I think those three are clearly the best mix for Port Adelaide.
On Saturday, Fremantle and Carlton, the Dockers looked home, then a bizarre finish. Andrew Brayshaw, the standout in the loss for the Dockers.
Yeah, I actually thought Fremantle were the better side across the afternoon. It was another kind of arm wrestle game where both sides had really good defensive structures. So in the middle, there was a little bit of clean ball, but high pressure, a lot of kind of holding the ball free kicks. And yeah, your likes of kind of your Brayshaws and your Youngs stood out a little bit more in that sense because they were just a bit cleaner and Patrick Cripps wasn't as imposing in terms of, I guess, the prolific numbers he can get. So I thought Fremantle, yeah, had the ascendancy for most of the match. And then it looked like they were home and hosed, and Carlton managed to snatch a late one off the Matty Cotterill goal that probably shouldn't have happened on the replays. And then, yeah, that descent free kick just had everyone lost in the dying stages, and we were clawing our way through the vision to figure out what had happened. And ultimately, I understand why the umpire made that decision, because what Jordan Clark said was unacceptable, but the reason that we got to that point obviously was a massive error on from the umpiring department to allow that Matt Cotterill mark. So it's a disappointing way to end what was a really enthralling game. And I was saying to the Fremantle supporters around the ground, who were obviously quite deflated about how it had played out, like it's frustrating that they're not undefeated anymore, but they showed so promise that I think it's one of those games similar to Port Adelaide in round three when they lost to Melbourne that you're disappointed you don't take the 4 points, but clearly you can match it with the best. And I think Fremantle will, or at least put themselves in a position now where they can play finals, because defensively they've had so many injuries, but it hasn't hurt them. I mean, Josh Draper had another really good game. I mean, statistically it doesn't look great, especially from a fantasy perspective, but he was so strong one on one, and it's no easy task in your third game to match up on Curnow and Mackay, and he did a pretty good job, I reckon.
Yeah, Carlton weren't at their best, but they still found a way, which is a really good sign. So let's get on to the final game that you did. Richmond and St Kilda, Norwood Oval, and the Saints got going in the second half. Shea Bolton was creating problems everywhere for the Tigers early in that game.
Yeah, it was a funny one because it was just awesome to be at Norwood, like shoulder to shoulder around the entire venue, very suburban footy where you're calling on top of the bench essentially, so everyone can hear everything you're saying and you can hear everything they're saying. And someone lays a tackle on the wing in front of you and you can hear the thump, and it was really, really fun to be up and close and watch this contest. But early on, yeah, Richmond just burst out of the blocks and St Kilda looked totally lost. I think defensively their structures were failing, and Dustin Martin was all over the place, just absolutely hurting them back to his best, Dusty, after that week off with the calf injury. And then we get to the quarter time break and Ross Lyon pulls all the players in, and as I touched on, we're meters away from this, so we could see everything happening. And none of the line coaches got a word in. He was just spraying them for the entire quarter, to the point where even when they started to go back out there and get into their positions, he's still singling out players as he's walking off the boundary line and screaming at them from meters away. And it was a classic old Ross Lyon spray. And whatever it was, it started to build some momentum for them in the second quarter. And then we got to halftime, and obviously would have given them another whack down in the rooms. And by the time we got into that second half, it was a totally new look Saints. And then all of a sudden we had this back and forth affair, and Richmond wasted a couple of chances late, just purely because I think they're inexperienced. And Shea Bolton, yeah, had some really special goals to try and keep them alive. But St Kilda looked back to their best in that second half, the shades we've seen over the first month. So yeah, it's a funny old one. I'm still not totally on St Kilda's bandwagon, considering the sides that they've beaten, the ways they've gone about it. I still think even the week prior with the Essendon loss, like it's a little worried that teams can go on runs against them. But that being said, their record is a side at the moment that can play finals. But I think when they play some of these topper sides, we'll get a bit more of an understanding of where they actually sit.
Round four notable fantasy scores, and Harry Sheasel continues his great start to the season, 121 points.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it last week how he's such a reliable kind of loophole option. And now it's almost like at the point where I think he's a reliable outright captain. Like there were worries about the midfield rotations, considering I guess that's where they eventually wanted him to play. But because of, I guess, the success of Davies Uniacke, Wardlaw is now floating in there as well. Simpkins playing up forward. And even McCurch is still down at half back. But they've got this plethora of options, and Tom Powell's been thrust in there. And I think Sheasel's actually found his home now at half back, and even taking kickouts as well. He's getting so many of those, which is helping his scoring. So All of a sudden, you know, he's just a reliable 120s guy, which I just didn't see him having that consistency, which is incredible that he's been able to do so in the opening months. So, yeah, I think he has to be looked at every single weekend in terms of captaincy options about, I guess, where his game sits in the grand scheme of things. So, for this weekend, for example, North Melbourne play on the Sunday. So, you'd probably want to loophole one of your stars earlier in the week. I mean, you know, look at Merritt on a Friday night, possibly. Or even a Dawson on the Saturday afternoon, but or you know Rosie Saturday night, but he could be a fallback option quite comfortably against the Cats on Sunday.
Yeah, completely agree with that. So next one here, we'll do a group here. It's 135 for Zach Merritt, 133 for Connor Rosie, who is actually outstanding.
Yeah, the Merritt one I didn't catch too much of, I guess, his impact. I was working the boundary that Friday night, and it looked like he was getting his normal kind of disposals on the outside and then occasionally laying some tackles, but he just accumulates them, right? That's how damaging he can be, and just continually finds to ways to score. But every year he kind of ends up around that 120 to 110 to 120 mark, and that's why I started with him this year. Is he just has a proven track record now, and there's no Archie Perkins with the injury, the hamstring injury now, so maybe Ben Hobbs will get a bit more of a go. But yeah, Zach Merritt's kind of their go-to guy, and depending on who they're playing, he may get attention, but the next month looks pretty clear, you'd imagine, with the Dogs, the Crows, Collingwood, and the Eagles. So, yeah, I think that Friday night this week is probably where you'd want a VC if you've got Zach Merritt. And then, yeah, Connor Rosie, we touched on it a bit in the preseason that I'd seen him at training, and I just had this feeling he was going to get better, which is such a weird thing to say about a two-time All-Australian and reigning best and fairest. Like he was already shining, but handing him the captaincy has helped him blossom even more. So he's just breaking away with damaging inside 50s, hitting the scoreboard as well. And yeah, that was almost the complete game on Friday night. His first half is easily the best first half we've seen this season of any player. So from a scoring perspective, and this was the great debate in the build up to the year, you know, Butters was slightly cheaper, and it was a matter of, you know, how could you fit them into the team? And I had Connor all the way up until I think a couple of days out, and then switched to Butters just to work Sarong in, which kind of worked. But yeah, it'd be frustrating now because like Butters has been good, but yeah, Connor Rosie's an outright captain option now. He's just so prolific with his ceiling. So hopefully Butters can catch up to him in that sense. But I think he's the best Port player going right now.
On to Saturday there as well, and it's 127 from Errol Gordon. He had a pretty decent matchup against the Eagles, and he got to work. He's going to be a target in a couple of weeks when they come off their bye.
Yeah, after that awkward start and opening round, it was a little worrying about whether or not he could return to his best. But you're right, he's kind of an everyman, isn't he? Like supposed to be playing on the wing, but floats forward to score. At times we see him across the back line taking uncontested marks as well, which is why he can push out those 140s. So, yeah, you're right. He's by this weekend, so obviously you don't want to target him now. But the run after is very tasty, and the Suns and the Hawks and those 2 weeks following. So, yeah, you're right. He's definitely a target now because he's essentially bottomed out. You know, his break even's at 103 now. So, yeah, that's basically his range pretty comfortably as well when he's, you know, having solid performances. So, and I guess the inclusion of Taylor Adams hasn't hurt him either when we're talking about the midfield rotations and who's floating around the ground. So, yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty reliable premium option after his bye.
We mentioned Andrew Bradshaw earlier, 148 points, outstanding. He was hard at work all day there.
Yeah, this is what we needed to see from him because Justin Longmuir had been, you know, moving the magnets a little bit outside of Caleb Sarong. Everybody else had a secondary role, and Andrew Brayshaw's centre bounces had dropped down. I think it was from like 72 to 68 or something like that. It wasn't too dramatic, but it certainly was enough to hurt his scoring because he was finding himself on the wing a little bit more than often. And yeah, he had a massive game over the weekend to kind of instill that, yeah, he still has that potential to be a big game player. So you may see some highs and lows. It'll be a bit of a roller coaster, I think, with him this year, purely because depending on the matchup, he may, yeah, play more outside than inside. But yeah, Carlton was a good result. And Port Adelaide, they're going to need him in there because it's, yeah, going to be these, you know, really high profile matchups if you've got, you know, Sarong and Brayshaw matching up against Rosie and Butters. So yeah, I don't mind him as a target considering he's lost a fair bit of cash from those poor performances, and he's about 40K cheaper than his asking price. So Yeah, it's not a bad option considering they don't have the bye and their run's looking all right. But just be prepared that he could drop an 80 every now and again. He's probably not the Andrew Brayshaw that we knew to love over the last couple of seasons because the role's a bit inconsistent.
On Saturday night, Geelong and the Bulldogs, and it was just a couple of awesome performances for Marcus Bontempelli, 149 points, and Tom Liberatore, 132 points.
Yeah, and even Adam Treloar as well. That midfield just totally fired, which amazing they couldn't find their way over the line, which is frustrating obviously for Luke Beveridge. And I mean there's a little bit of that. I won't argue about it too much, but Jack McRae being named as the sub, I don't know what's going on over there at the Kennel. But Bontempelli, we've been waiting for this, haven't we? Like the really slow start would have been frustrating for those who paid up for the highest priced midfielder in the game, and nearly losing over 100,000 and then bounces back all of a sudden with this monster 149. So hopefully not too many people moved him on and stuck firm. Like I think he is a set and forget player, even if he does have these slower smaller scores of 90 or even just your low hundreds. I imagine you're wanting 120 every week, and hopefully he will get back to that stage. But the coach is just so unpredictable that who knows. But he's clearly still got that ceiling, which is good to see.
On to Sunday there, it was Gold Coast and GWS to kick off the first game there. Sam Clawesy was outstanding in his debut, 95 points. And Sam Flanders moved to a half-back role, 102 points from him, and that is quite noteworthy.
And Dimmer was very happy with that decision and how it played out. Despite the fact they lost the game, he felt that the run off halfback and the options that Flanders provided was a win. So I think we're going to see him staying down there. And a lot of people go, oh, that's a problem because he's not getting centre bounces. But the reality is, in the modern game that we're having, surging game breaking halfbacks is exactly what you want. You're looking at your Wanganeen Millers and even your Bonners to an extent. Like these guys, Nick Martin, like they're ones who are racking up high scores, the halfback runners, the old school Brett Delidios, and Sam Flanders as a midfielder who can accumulate it, gets thrown in that position. I reckon this could be an actual perfect combination for a fantasy coach. And thankfully, he had such a hot start. As a non-owner who was planning on getting him this week, it was a little worrying how high he could go and the amount of money he'd make. And he slowed down a little bit towards the end to the point where he hasn't gained a lot of cash. So he's still affordable with a relatively decent break even at 100, 850K. So he's only going to get more expensive from here. But thankfully, he didn't surge away in terms of his price for those who are probably looking to move Jordan on this week.
Onto the middle game there, it's Rowan Marshall, 136 points, Jack Steele, 131 points, and Isaiah Wanganeen Millerer, who was outstanding across halfback, 127 points.
Yeah, Miller and Bonner again just sharing disposals amongst themselves. A lot of uncontested marks. And then, yeah, that game-breaking drive that they tend to have, especially at Norwood, which is a very narrow ground. They shared the load quite comfortably. So I still think Ross prefers Wanganeen Millerer because he's a bit more damaging, whereas Bonner has a very high turnover rate. Steele, again, yeah, calling him literally meters away. He's an absolute ball back to his best in the middle. So there was that concern after the shoulder injury. Was he going to be, back to his tackling best? And he'd had that little dip in form at the back end of last year. But I think that was just because he'd spent so much time away. Like he's had a clean off season heading in, and he looks back to his best, which is good for those who started him because he was definitely underpriced. Ron Marshall's a funny one. Like he I think that he and Nank Evers probably split it in the end. Like Nank was winning a lot of hit outs over the back of him, but he's kind of like that Luke Jackson-esque Max Gawn type where he finds his own disposals, as we've come to know. So the hit outs, doesn't rely on them for a high score. The issue is he's still apparently mentioning that he's getting a little bit beat up after every game. And he did this last year as well, and he didn't end up missing many at all. But the fact that Ross Lyon's mentioning it now and that Tom Campbell may come into consideration is probably a concern if you are looking at upgrading Grundy to him this week, because you wouldn't want another ruck floating out there with him, because that will hurt his ability to go to 120 plus.
And the final game here, Jordan Dugowie had a pretty good matchup against the Hawthorn midfield, 135 points and a pretty clear outstanding performance.
Yeah, he's been very up and down to go. His poor games, he completely disappears, but clearly he's a bit of a barometer for them, right? When he's firing in the middle, Collingwood do look very slick. So against the Hawks, it's a very favourable matchup, I think, in terms of that midfield. Like, no Will Day at the moment. They weren't running with a stopper either. So he certainly cashed in that sense. But I'm not going to be expecting that every week. Obviously, they've got the bye this weekend. But when they face up against those more elite sides, yeah, he's at best probably going to be an 80s guy. Like, I get the 135 is tempting because he's totally blown his break even down. But he's just too unpredictable for me, to be honest.
Yeah, averaged just under 60 for his opening few games, and then the 135 he pops off for in that game. So gather round, done and dusted, Aaron, for another year. Where can listeners find you?
So you can find me at Aaron Bryans on Twitter. I'll be calling the Port and Fremantle game Saturday night, which is starting to become a pretty big contest that the Dockers have stayed here in South Australia. And I guess all eyes are on Sean Darcy. It sounds like he's going to play, and what that does to Luke Jackson, considering they've looked so good with him as the number one option. So that'll be interesting because Soldo obviously does like to leak hit outs. Maybe they can dual tandem him and find a way to score together. How much time Sean Darcy plays, we'll wait and see. But the overall context of the game, I guess, you've got two sides that on their form lines should be playing finals. Can the Dockers actually nab a win considering they're staying here for the week? We'll wait and see. So you can hear the call of that from 7:30 Eastern on the ABC Listen app anywhere around the country.
You can find me at AFL Ratings Pete on Twitter, AFL Ratings for the main account, plenty of news there, and aflratings.com.au for a stack of fantasy information to help your team. Well, Aaron, enjoy your week, enjoy your preparation, and good luck with your trades. We'll speak to you at the end of next round.
Thanks, Pete.